Hi there. I'm Jason McMullen.
And I'm Kate Ariano. Welcome to Words Aloud.
We love books. We love stories, poems, memoirs, narratives, and any kind of written or spoken word that moves us.
That's why we created Words Aloud, a space for us to invite writers of all kinds to share their pieces that we like.
Come get lost in words. You're with friends here.
Hello, and welcome, friends, to Words Aloud. Today in the studio, we've got Kara Murray. Kara is not only a Brooklyn-based professional copywriter and creative mind, she is a close friend of WHUS Radio. Here is Kara Murray.
The Cure. The watch on Jack's wrist beeped five times. For some reason, that broke him out of his stupor. Was it 5 in the morning or 5 in the evening? Looking around the lab he'd been shut in for what felt like months, he realized he had no idea how to tell. The windows were blocked off. The only light flickered weakly from the artificial lamps above him. When the virus started going around, nobody could have ever anticipated what came after it. At first, people were just getting violently ill. All travel in and out of the United States was restricted, and the first ones to get infected were quarantined. The government assured everyone it would be over soon. And then the thirst started. Eyes turning a milky white, skin rotting, teeth falling out. The virus took over their brains, filling it with the hunger for other human beings. There was no way to stop it, no way to understand it, and no way to contain it. Jack was just a lowly lab tech at the time, fresh out of medical school and still naive with a determination to save the world. He quickly moved up the ranks, not because of his talent, but because everyone above him was slowly being turned one by one. He'd been locked in here for, he didn't know how long anymore, with his only instructions being to find a cure and fast. So far, it felt like he'd tried everything. They'd been sending food in twice a day, and the lab had a bathroom and a shower. Every other week, they gave him clean clothes. Occasionally, another fellow lab tech would come in, but they never stayed long. He had no access to the news, a phone, or any other mode of communication that would potentially distract him. For all Jack knew, everyone out there was dead, and everything he was doing was in vain. He shook himself out of it. "You're just tired," he said aloud. "Thinking like that won't do you any good." He glanced down at the sample he'd been testing and looked at it. Really looked at it. Wait a second. His heart thumped painfully against his chest. Could it be? Could this be the one? First, he had to identify the disease molecule. Then, he'd had to modify the bacteriophage through genetic engineering. That was the hard part. He'd sequenced the viral genome, amplified it, and had started making changes one by one until he found a null form of the virus that was safe to inject into a mouse model. And now this one, trial number 267, finally appeared to have been a success. "I did it," Jack said. His voice sounded strange even to his own ears. His hands were shaking, so he carefully put the test tube down. I did it." The sound of a door opening behind him made him jump. He turned and saw General Wilson entering the room. A man not much older than him, like Jack, Wilson had been hastily moved up the ranks in the army once everyone else began to get infected. He came across as stoic and calm, but a deeper glance at him would quickly show that he was scared out of his mind, just like the rest of them. Jack had never been so happy to see another human being in his life. "General Wilson, sir!" He sprang into a sloppy salute. When the other man returned it, he moved forward and gave him a hug. He couldn't help it. "Roberts, get off me," Wilson said, struggling to push him off. "What's gotten into you? Get a grip." "Sorry, sir," Jack said, taking a step back and swallowing the lump in his throat. It's just, I haven't seen another person in what feels like years. It's just, I don't know what I'm doing and I want to go home. It's just, I think I might have saved everyone. I think I found a cure." Wilson's eyes widened. "A cure? You're serious?" Jack nodded eagerly, picking up the test tube to show him. "Yes. I reverse sequenced the beta phage genome and found possible manipulation in the DNA AT-rich regions. After CRISPR manipulation of the target sequence, I found a weakness. After immunogenic exposure, B cells responded strongly and mouse models showed no symptom presentation." "My God," Wilson said, almost in wonder. "You did it, Roberts. You really did it." Jack exhaled. His head seemed to swim, like he'd had a few too many drinks. He was going home. Finally, it was over. "I did it," he repeated. "I really did it." He laughed, a little maniacally. "I did it! I found the cure!" "You did," General Wilson said, watching him with an oddly calm look on his face. I saved everyone, Jack said, running his hands through his already messy hair. Everyone. Everyone, Wilson repeated. Roberts, I hope you know, we won't be releasing this cure to the public. The words stopped him like a punch to the gut. He paused. Maybe he'd misunderstood. Well, it'll be sent to human testing first, won't it? And then everyone else will get it. No, the other man shook his head. We're not going to be sending it anywhere at all. They were speaking the same language, but it wasn't making sense. Jack slowly put a hand down on the table to steady himself. But then what have I been doing here? Why have you kept me here this whole time, if not to develop something that will save us? Oh yes, Wilson said. We wanted a cure, and now we have it. That doesn't mean we're going to do anything with it. But your job here is done. Something was very, very wrong. He knew it in his gut. What was the point then, if they weren't going to distribute it to everyone? Were they just going to keep it for themselves, protect only the ones they deemed worthy? But couldn't Jack just tell everyone he developed the cure, that he knew the truth? He turned away to look at the test tube. Mere minutes ago, it had been the most precious thing in the world to him, but now all he wanted to do was break it into a million pieces. He recognized the slow, thick feeling crawling up his spine as nothing other than dread. They probably created this disease, and now they have the cure, and I helped them. Suddenly, Jack felt something cold and metal press against the back of his head, and the unmistakable click of a pistol being cocked. Thank you for your service, Roberts, General Wilson said kindly. There was nowhere to run, nothing he could do to stop this from happening. Jack squeezed his eyes shut on instinct, his mind going blank as he waited for it to be over. He heard a loud crack of a gunshot and something splattered against his back and hair, but other than that, nothing. Seconds passed. He was still alive, still standing, frozen to the spot. He knew he should turn around and see what happened, but he couldn't. Whether it was shock or fear preventing him from doing so, he didn't know. Jack Roberts, a new voice said. That startled his brain into working again. Jack turned around and immediately saw the body of General Wilson on the ground. Apparently, that was what had splattered onto him. Bile rose in his throat as he looked at what was left of the other man. It didn't matter that he was technically a doctor himself or that the general had just tried to kill him. Seeing the body made his throat tighten. He quickly turned his attention to who had shot him. A woman was standing in the doorway, a gun in her hand. She stared at the general with disgust before looking up at Jack. He wasn't sure how she knew his name, but he nodded anyway. If you want to live, you should follow me, she said, jerking her head towards the hallway. You can thank me for saving your life later. Did he want to live? Jack didn't know anymore. Everyone he cared about was gone, taken by the virus or ordered to go no contact once he was placed in this lab. But all that was left here was a dead man, and pretty soon others would come looking for him. Jack didn't want to be around when they arrived. Bring the cure with you, the woman called over her shoulder as she left. How did she know already? It had only been minutes. Was this another trap? Was he going to be led into a different room, only to end up with the same fate as Wilson? But she'd gone through the trouble of saving Jack's life once. Surely she could have just shot both of them and taken the cure with her. That had to mean something. Anyway, he didn't have much of a choice. Jack hastily gathered his materials and left the lab. Who are you? He asked. He had to jog to keep up with her brisk pace. She definitely wasn't someone from the military or another lab personnel. Her dark hair was pulled back into a tight bun, and her shirt, pants, and blazer were all black. Her shoes didn't make a sound as she strode through the halls. She was the cleanest, most put-together person he'd seen in months. There was no way she was a civilian, but what group did that leave? You can call me V, was all she said. It wasn't much, but it was something. Okay, V, Jack said. Why did you save me, and how did you know Wilson was going to kill me? She scoffed, throwing him a disdainful glance. You know, for the savior of mankind, you're pretty dumb. Excuse me? Why do you think Wilson showed up when he did? It's no coincidence he walked in seconds after you made your discovery. They've got every inch of that lab probed. You were being watched the minute you set foot in there, Roberts, by friends and foes. Which one are you? She smiled grimly. You're still alive, aren't you? I think that makes me pretty friendly. Now pick up the pace. We don't have much time. Where are you taking me? Jack asked. You ask a lot of questions. Here. V led him to a hallway with a dead end and opened the door to a dingy supply closet. One of the ceiling tiles was removed and the air duct was open. I'll give you a boost, she said, squatting down and making a cradle with her hands. When Jack didn't move, she snapped, Come on! Do you want them to find us here or not? This is crazy, Jack said, But was it really any crazier than anything that had happened these last few months? He stepped into her hands and hoisted himself inside the duct. It was cramped, dark, and dusty. He could feel his mild claustrophobia kicking in as V pulled herself up behind him. "Let's go," she said. "Start moving, that way." Jack obeyed. They crawled along the ducts for what felt like hours, and the only talking they did was when she gave him directions. Sometimes it was to go right or left, other times it was to stop completely as soldiers rushed around below them. Jack could just barely make them out as they shouted orders and kicked down all the doors. Some alarm had started going off in the distance not long after they climbed up. Clearly they were looking for him. The thought of the ducts breaking under their weight, depositing them right at the feet of people who wanted him gone, made his palms sweat. He had to keep wiping them on his lab coat, pretending he was just checking the test tubes in his pocket. They'd wait until the coast was clear before starting forward again. Finally, V said, "Stop here. Look out." They were at what appeared to be another dead end. She squeezed past him and kicked open the vent, poking her head out to make sure no one was there. "Okay, come on." Jack climbed out behind her and was met with the burst of cold, fresh air. The sun bore down on his face, the sudden light almost blinding him. He was outside. For the first time in months, he was actually outside. They'd managed to travel through the lab and come out on the roof. "What are we doing here?" Jack asked. "Are you going to push me off?" V turned to him, exasperated. "Roberts, if I wanted you dead, don't you think I would have done it by now? We're waiting for our ride." "Our ride," Jack repeated. "Yep, and there it is," she pointed. In the distance, there was a black helicopter making its way towards them. "You still haven't told me who you are or what you want," Jack said. "Don't you think I deserve some answers after everything?" "You do," V agreed, "and I wish I could give them to you, but I can't. Not until we're in a secure location. For now, I'll just tell you this. I want the same thing you want, to find a cure for this disease and save the people I care about, the ones who are left, at least. That's why we've been watching you, and it's why I saved your life earlier." As the helicopter got closer, Jack could see a man leaning out of the side, waving. He threw down a rope ladder. "Grab on," he called. "We'll get you out of here." Suddenly, the door to the roof burst open. 6 men in uniform charged towards them, guns drawn. "Oh, God," Jack said, ducking as a wave of bullets sprayed towards them, bouncing off the concrete. "What do we do?" V had a grim smile on her face. "Roberts, do you trust me?" "I guess. Then there's only one thing to do." Without further ado, she ran and leapt off the roof, just managing to catch the ladder and start to climb up. Jack stayed where he was, paralyzed with fear. Even if he jumped, there was no guarantee he'd make it. But if he stayed, he'd be killed. His hard work would go to waste. More people would die because of him. "Come on," V shouted. "You're part of the resistance now." The resistance. Jack didn't know what it meant, but it sounded better than whatever was waiting for him here. He looked down at the ground far below him, then at the men bearing down behind him. He could either die a prisoner or he could die free, having fought until the very end. Jack made his choice. He took a running start, and he jumped. Subway. There is something both lonely and liberating about crying on the subway. Sometimes you are packed between strangers, and sometimes they will pass you a tissue or offer you advice in a language you can't understand, because pain is transcendent, and so is love. Other times they will leave you alone or scoot further down the bench and let you have a private moment among the chaos that people bring with them. Sometimes there will be no one on either side of you, just your reflection in the dark window and the voice over the loudspeaker, and the car will stretch on for miles, and you will feel lost in the crowd, left to look at the twisting, jumbling, confusing map, and wonder, why am I here? But the other thing about crying on the subway is that eventually it will start to move. When you get up off the dirty bench, someone else will sit down, and soon the subway car will pass through the tunnels like always, and it will come to a stop, and it will open its doors, and you will get a chance to try again. Things that scare me. The pause on a roller coaster right before it drops, a floorboard that creaks in the middle of the night, loud footsteps and laughter that follow me home in the dark, asking over and over just for a smile, the spider that doesn't pay rent in the corner of my bedroom, when my best friend drinks too much and cries in the bathroom and there's no way to make it better or to understand why, My grandmother forgetting my birthday, my age, and finally my name. Even though we have the same eyes, hers don't recognize me. Falling in love so hard, my heart takes over from my head. Looking them in the face and saying just that, and the endless stretch of silence and the time it takes for them to take a breath and say it back, or not. Airplanes, because they are giant metal contraptions of death, and although my head might always be stuck in the clouds, I know my feet belong firmly on the ground. Saying yes, saying no, realizing that I can't shed my skin like a snake and start again, and that this body is the only one I will ever have for the rest of my life. The fact that the universe is vast and endless and always moving, and one day I won't be here and my memory won't be either, just a blip on the radar that might not have even been real. And clowns, because I hate their noses and their clammy hands beneath their gloves. How to get over something that really wasn't anything. 1. Tell him it's her or me. Deep down, you know he's going to choose her, but it hurts anyway, like you've been hit with a baseball, like it came out of nowhere and clocked you right beneath the eyes. You heard the heads up, but ignored it, and now you've got the bruises to show. 2. Say you need space because it's the right thing to say, and besides, it's what everyone says. He gives it to you because he's not a bad person, even though your mother and your roommate and all of your friends think the opposite. 3. Say you don't want space anymore, because even though it's painful to be near him, it's even worse without him. His ghost is everywhere, but whenever you look at it head on, it disappears. There's never enough of him for you to hold on to. There never has been. 4. Change your mind constantly. Make him hurt and then feel guilty about it. Owe him money and don't pay it back. Tell your friends they don't have to pick sides, but then want them to pick yours. He's had his fingers in your heart and now in your brain, too, twisting everything up and letting it all unravel. You got so used to his hands that you didn't realize he was molding you into someone different. And now you're stumbling around, lonely, bumping into walls. 5. Watch the time slip past you slowly. You've got so much more of it now. Fill it with food, exercise, friends, music, tears, laughter. Realize that there are so many words and meanings for love. You misunderstood one of them, but you can learn the others. 6. Be proud that he can enter a room without making you leave it. He can look you in the eyes, and you won't be the first to look away. He was your atlas at one point, but when he shrugged, you kept spinning. 7. Let him come back, and when he says, it's you, know that he won't mean it forever, or maybe even tomorrow. But he means it now, and even after all of this, it's still enough. Memory. There's a ghost in my grandma's house. It sleeps in her bed and sits in her kitchen and drifts from room to room. If it looks like her and walks like her, but she can't remember my name or what she did this morning, is it really her? If she's known me my whole life, but right now I'm a stranger, which one of us is lying? The woman who birthed the woman who birthed me, a product of her success and her mistakes. Do I love her or do I blame her? How can I do either? I want to grab her by the arms and shake her back and forth, like it would make everything in her head fall back into place, and tell her, you know me, you do. I used to stand at the stove and watch you cook. You used to make my birthday cakes, and now I make yours. I would sleep over on Saturday nights, and we would eat waffles in the morning. You gave me your sweet tooth. You held me in your arms when I was born. Don't you remember? I wish you would die. I wish you would live. I wish you would look down at me, the way you did before I got taller than you, and smile at me, and tell me everything will be okay. For now, I'll keep all the good memories for both of us. I'll remind her whenever she asks, and introduce myself every time I call, until the day comes when she isn't here, and it's left to me to do what she could not remember. We're not in love. We're not in love, even though we'll be driving and you'll be singing along to the radio in that ugly voice only I'm allowed to hear. Even though you'll call me late at night and tell me you're so scared of the future. Even though you'll tell me maybe we knew each other in a past life and maybe we'll know each other in the next and maybe then I'll get it right. We're not in love, even though we can sit in a diner and drink coffee for hours. Even though whenever we watch the stars, I'm always looking at you. even though I feel like you're an umbrella built for two people, and there's been room for me this whole time. And maybe those wise men are right, and maybe I am a fool for rushing in, but I know we're not in love because sometimes you'll be telling me about someone else, but all I can hear is that it's not me and it never will be. So the next time you ask me, have you ever been in love? I'll say it was something like that. To me, it felt like home, but to him, it was just a place to stay. And although I thought I made you happy, I guess it's just not the same. And although you'd never try to hurt me, I guess you don't know your own strength. And it seems that whenever I'm looking at you, you're looking the other way. And I guess that's how I know we're not in love.
All right, well, we are back with our friend, Kara Murray. It's me, Kate Ariano, and my friend, Jason. Hey, Jason.
Hello.
So, Kara, thanks so much for being in the studio with us. We're happy to finally have you on.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. I know, I said I would submit stuff like 6 months ago, and then I didn't. So I'm really glad I did.
It happens, and we're happy to have you here.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to kick things off with one of those little questions, and it is such a pleasure to have you here in the studio, and I loved your work. I should open by saying that. But
thank you, Jason.
Can you tell us about what do you like to do, or what are you doing when you are not writing? Could be about work or life or whatever. Just take it however you want to.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I feel like writing takes up such a small part of my life these days, but also it doesn't, now that I've just said that. But basically, when I'm not writing for fun, I'm writing for work, because I work at an advertising agency as a copywriter / social media coordinator, I guess. So I do a lot of like regular ad writing that's a lot less fun. And when I'm not doing that, I don't know. I like to bake. I like to cook. I like to read. I like to listen to music. I like to go on hikes. That's about it. That kind of takes up my life.
You say that's about it. Like, that's not a lot of fun stuff you got going on.
I know. I guess, yeah. I'm not doing all of that all the time, but that is the main stuff that sparks the most joy.
Well, I know one of the other main stuff you've had going on lately is that you moved from good old Connecticut to New York City.
That is true. And it is coming up on a year now. Oh, sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good. Congratulations for 1 year.
Thank you.
But I wanted to ask, is there any kind of difference that you see in your writing when you were living in Connecticut versus when you're living in New York City? Like, have your influences changed at all?
That's a great question. And the answer is going to be, I don't know, a little sad maybe, but it's that a lot of my work tends to come out when I'm feeling really sad or really stressed, or just because it's an outlet for me, right? So if I have something that's really hurting me or just weighing on me, I'll write about it, and then it's out and it's done. So since I've moved here, I haven't really felt that urge to really write that much, which is good and bad. Good because it means that I think just overall I'm having a lot of fun where I live. I love my apartment. I love my roommates. I love my neighborhood. I love that people like you and other friends come visit me. We have fun things to do. But it's also kind of sad because it means that I just don't feel inspiration to write as much. So I kind of have to find other ways to get it, which is a little harder now.
So for me, writing is a lot of things. You know, it's like a craft. It's a passion. It's something you really just, there are times when you can't do it. There are times when you have to do it. But I think the most important moments of writing in my life have been times when I was using it as therapy and using it to try to reflect on difficult parts of my life or things I was struggling with internally or trauma or whatever. What is writing for you? What parts of that sort of strikes a chord for you, and what parts of it are not part of your relationship with writing?
That's a great question. My first like knee-jerk answer is to say that writing is like just kind of everything for me. Like, because when I was a kid, my parents, my mom especially, will always say this, that like, they always knew I was going to be a writer because I was always just making up fun little stories, and all of my teachers were in my report card. It was like, she can't do math, but she is a great writer. So that, yeah, and that's, that much has changed. So like, writing has always just been something I turn to, something I've just been good at always. Just, it's been really easy for me to do. And then as I got older, it became less of a therapy and less of something I did just for fun for myself, and more kind of like a thing that I had to do for, not survival, but it's my job. So being good at writing is pretty important to my job. And that's kind of a weird thing to juggle at this point in my life right now. But I would say that, yeah, writing is still definitely a big therapy for me, but less so now that I kind of have to do it so frequently, and it's something that I have to share with tons of other people now.
I feel like it changes you as a writer when you're going from it being more of that, I'm doing this for me, to I'm doing this for my paycheck, yeah. Which isn't a bad thing. It's a different kind of writing. It's just, I know for me personally, it's been an adjustment. I'm sure it's been for you, and I'm sure it is for a lot of people that figure out how to be passionate about their writing in two different ways and in two different spaces. So going back to Cara Murray was a writer since she was right out the womb. What is, if you can even remember, the earliest story that you can remember writing, or like one of the earliest stories? Because I know, like, I think back to some of the stuff that I used to write and I'm like, what was going on inside my head? But is there anything like that for you that you're like, yeah, this was one I knew?
There were a couple. I used to go, my mom had like a big desktop computer in our house that she would do her work on, and I would go and write in Microsoft Word on that. And I feel like, I don't know, maybe this was just me, but I used to write like basically ripoffs of like all my favorite books, because when you're like 8 or 9, that's all you know. So I tried to write like a Magic Treehouse ripoff, and my mom was like, that's a Magic Treehouse ripoff. They will sue you for that. I used to write a lot of short stories for school assignments, and just hand those in. I wrote one about like a snow day, things I did on a snow day. I wrote one about, this is like so weird. I wrote one about a girl who discovers a talking baby, and, they run from the FBI. That was an early work. I know. I should go back to that.
You should publish that, please.
I should. Yes, that was... I've always had a lot of weird, random ideas.
What are you reading these days? Any favorites you want to recommend to our listening audience?
Oh, yes. When I moved here, I joined a book club with my roommate and her friend from work, and her friend from work's entire friend group, basically. And that has been really great, because they all have really great opinions and ideas. And right now we're reading this book called Piranesi. I don't remember who it's by, which is very sad. I just read this book called To Catch a Thief. I read that on the plane when I was traveling, and that book was pretty good. I read this book called If I Had Your Face by Francis Cha, which I really recommend. Really, really good stuff. What else? My roommate and I really both like fantasy, so we read this book called The Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo, and that has a sequel, and it's called, I can't remember what the sequel's called, but it takes place in New Haven, Connecticut at Yale, and it's like magic and secret societies, and yeah, that's really good.
Cool.
Those are just off my head.
Is Piranesi by Susanna Clark, does that sound right?
It does sound right.
I think I read another book by this author that I liked.
Yes, it is. Piranesi. Yes, it is by Susanna Clark.
All right, cool.
I'm super curious about how you spell that.
I just Googled it, and I had to type in a couple things just now for it to come up right.
What was the final verdict? What was it?
Prianesi. Pirinisi.
Sick. Yeah. Well, I know what author I'm going to be looking up. Her name is Cara Murray. Oh. No, not even her. Her name is Cara Murray.
Got that wrong.
It's you. It is totally you, because your stories today were so great. The one in particular that I really became entranced with was The Cure, because it sounds oddly familiar. Yes. You know, given the state of the world in the last couple of years. So I must ask, was that any kind of influence for you?
I actually wrote that in 2020 for an assignment for my creative writing class, my senior year of college. And it was early March 2020. And I was like, oh, this would be funny. Like, this would just be silly to do. And our mutual friend, Kyle Jackson, who is now in med school, was getting ready to go to med school at the time. I asked him for help on how you would find a cure to a disease. So he helped me with the medical jargon. And yeah, I just wrote like a goofy little short story. And then afterwards, it became not so goofy.
I have actual chills, but like not the good kind, because I think you might have just predicted like the last 3 years.
Yeah,
maybe someone should have just read that and they would have, you know, had a vaccine a little earlier. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm glad COVID didn't turn people into flesh-eating zombies, though.
Yeah, that would have...
A small mercy.
Better kept in fiction, I think.
Yes, agreed.
All right, Cara, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today, speaking with me and Kate. Let's see, the name is Cara Murray. And are there places people should look for you to find your work or find you?
No, not really.
Understood.
No one
understood.
Go find Cara.
maybe we'll talk you into doing another episode someday in the future.
That would be fun. I would definitely do that.
Cool. Anything else you want to share with us before we close out the show?
No, just thank you so much for having me on. This was really, really fun.
Thanks, Cara.
Thank you.
Cara, it was lovely having you on Words Aloud, and we hope you'll come back and visit soon, in person this time. Thank you to each and every one of you tuning in today. This has been Words Aloud.